And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from two comfortable chairs at our Seaport studio, where I'm joined by NBA Countdown host, co-host.
I don't know what the hell to call
him. Celebrity who attended the Nets game, said last night, Zach, I'm going to be at the same Nets game as you. And I thought, oh, great, we'll be sitting near each other on press row. All of a sudden, I look at the Jumbotron, and there's Jay Williams on the Jumbotron sitting courtside. You're not one of the people anymore. You've graduated past the people.
First off, I'm always one of the people. I'm a Nets fan. I grew up in New Jersey. So I know the Psy family pretty well from connections. And I know Sean Marks and obviously Kevin Durant, I hope.
He doesn't play for the Nets, but he's on the Nets. It was actually jarring. Yesterday was my first Nets game of the year, and it was jarring to look at the sideline and see a giant seven-footer in a yellow hoodie sitting on the Nets bench. Be like, oh, that's Kevin Durant. He plays for the Nets now. That's very weird.
It was even more jarring for me to see how many conversations him and Kyrie have. It's like after every timeout, Kyrie and him were literally like, you know, talking to each other about what play just occurred, what they need to do. And it was like that dynamic – it just seemed like it just superseded other relationships. Like, I didn't see Kyrie talk to Kenny Atkins a lot. I'm not saying he was doing it maliciously. It's just that dynamic is so different. And there's going to be some challenges there with that team.
Do you think they were talking about what plays were run or, like, the nature of human existence, whether Saturn really has rings or, like, what, do you really think they were talking about basketball?
I do, just because I know Kevin is a savant. I know Kyrie thinks about all the time. And I think that's going to be a challenge for that team, Zach, not to get into anything serious, but – it's like either Kyrie has the ball in his hands and he's scoring, or he's making a play for somebody else. Or when, you know, Caris LeVert gets the ball or Spencer Dinwiddie get the ball, they go into ISO. There's no continuity to their offense. It seems stagnant. They lost to a 0-3 Pacer team last night.
Well, I said to you before this podcast, we should each pick our most disappointing team of the early season. And I don't think the Nets would qualify as the number one most disappointing team for either of us, but they're certainly on the list. And Kenny Atkinson said last night, we're not running any plays. He said that in the press conference. We're not running anything. And he's going, it's very interesting because I was watching that last night and I was trying to think of what's missing. Like there's just something when you watch the Nets that's just something isn't there. And part of it is I think they need an ass kicker. They need someone who's just going to hit somebody, because like even DJ's not doing that anymore.
That's not
Domantas Sabonis came into the game last night and I was like, I'm hitting you, you're gonna go under the rim, I'm gonna dunk on your ass, and it set the tone for the whole game. And then they're just a little small on the perimeter. They're just and part of it is what you just said, where they just have, they have a lot of possessions where there's no passes,
empty possessions. And Jared Allen,
not empty, just no, there's literally zero passes.
Yeah. And Jared Allen is talented, but he's so skinny and fragile. And you just gotta be patient with that. But I agree with you. Like watching, now Miles Turner got hurt last night, but I know there are not a lot of teams that play two traditional post guys, and Miles Turner can guard in the perimeter and Sabonis was knocking down shots, but they just obliterated them on the blocks.
They remind me a little bit of, it's funny, these teams like Portland always ranks at the bottom of the league in passes and at the top of the league in pull-up jumpers. Boston is becoming that kind of team, and it's all these teams with not only ball-dominant point guards, but these drive-and-kick systems, and it's drive-and-kick, 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 and it looks really pretty, and they end up taking like a lot of threes and a lot of shots at the rim in some cases. That's what you want, but sometimes it's like drive-and-kick, 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 and kind of goes like nowhere. It just leads to like an endless cycle of like drive and drive and drive, or just no passes. And something like the Nets, I think the Nets will be fine. I thought they were about a 44 or 45 win team this year without KD. And when you say there's something missing, the seven footer in the hoodie is missing.
Can I put my fan hat on real quick for 1 second?
Yes,
though?
Your fan hat.
In my fan hat.
Your
yes.
Swamp Dragons fan hat.
Yes. I got a little bit frustrated last night. There was one point in the third quarter where we're watching the game, and I think the Nets are down 7 or 8, and Kyrie does this. By the way, he's the best ticket in basketball. Just watching him dance with the ball, it's mesmerizing. As a former point guard, as a former guard. But he scores off he shoots off a move, and everybody oohs and ahs, and they cheer off the move, but the ball doesn't go in. And I'm like, no, Brooklyn Nets can't become that fan base. Like where you're down 7 and you're cheering and you're ooh and ah and off a move. Like, we gotta win actual games. Like, these are games you have to win and find a way to win. And it's almost like, you know, watching this team, they're talented, but they just don't seem like they have it together. They could figure it out, but they don't have it together yet.
And by the way, the reaction to the Jackie McMullen story on Kyrie, was, you doth protest a little too much. Jackie's not wrong. None of those details in that story, as far as I know, are wrong. A lot of us have heard the same buzz, and the Nets got very defensive. And that, not just Kyrie. Kyrie's going to say what he says, but like the Nets were very angry about that story. They went on the attack about it. And I'm like, well, it's what are you specifically, what are you taking issue with? You
know, this comes with the territory after last year for Kyrie.
That's the thing. And the story was about you built this culture and you asked yourself a question. Should we risk compromising it to bring in superstar talent? And to pretend as if they didn't spend the entire month of June agonizing about that question is false. And they agonized it about it. And I think they're still agonizing about it now. And they doth protest too much. Let's move on.
Okay.
What a Wednesday night. In the NBA.
I was up late last night. Turned into an early morning for get up, but it was worth it.
So Steph Curry broke his hand. And the injury timeline, as I've been reading and researching, can range from 2 weeks to 8 weeks. And
what is the actual injury? Because I didn't hear a word.
It's one of the metacarpals.
Metacarpal?
What are the metacarpals?
Because I broke my third metacarpal and it took me...
Which one is that?
It's the one right in the middle. Okay. It took me about a good 2.5 months.
If it's towards the end of that timeline, it's over.
Yeah.
And honestly...
I think it's already over.
Well, you and I both picked the Warriors to miss the playoffs. And
people were enraged about that, by the way, which I don't understand.
Well, look, I mean, they were a really hard team to project. I mean, John Hollinger, who's one of the smartest people I know in the world, period, said anyone who thinks they should miss the playoffs needs to revisit that take. They have maybe the best offense player and the best defense player. And I was texting back and forth with him. I'm like, yeah, but they got like nothing else. And they were a hard team to project, but you know, they were getting smoked by Phoenix, who's been frisky this year.
Yes.
When this broken hand happened.
Well, they got smoked by OKC.
It hasn't been pretty.
No.
They did not look like a playoff team before this. Now, there's just no scenario. If he misses even 2 weeks, 3 weeks, this was part of my concern. They have no margin for error for a Steph ankle tweak. 10 games. That's it.
I said this at the beginning of the season where, you know, we were going back and looking at some of the research with it, and I got worried about Steph, you know, having the ball in his hands that much. You know, when you play with Kevin Durant or you play with Klay Thompson, the continuity of the system that they have, right, the ball moves around a lot. Now, when you need Steph to go off for 30 every single night, Zach, like the ball is going to stick in his hands, and there may be a tendency for him to try to do stuff that he doesn't always do. There was one point in the game I said, they're down 47-14. And I get to this certain point where I'm like, all right, like just move on. Like I would take, I know you try to come back from 30 plus down, but like take Steph out. And I'm not, you know, questioning Steve Kerr. Obviously he's a good coach, but like I take Steph out and say, okay, like we have to move on to the next game. Like we just don't have it this game sometimes. Like I don't know why he was even still in the game. Came back later without him.
Yeah, one of those little fake comebacks. I like the rookie Pascal. I think he's pretty good.
Love him. Plays hard all the time.
You know, but I think they're probably, barring some sort of miraculously fast recovery, I mean, their schedule is tough in the next month.
They're the worst defensive team in the league. The worst defensive team in the league.
And without Curry, I looked at the on-off number. I mean, historically, their offense has not been very good without Curry, even when they had all the stars. This year, they're much worse without him, and they could be the worst offensive team in the league now. So part of the reason I picked them to miss the playoffs was that they owe Brooklyn this very strange draft pick, which is top 20 protected this year. And then if the Warriors keep it, normally what happens is you roll these picks over a couple years and then they become second round picks. This is Brooklyn's only shot at this pick. If they don't get it this year, it becomes a 2025 second round pick. I have never seen a draft pick like that before. And it makes me think something weird happened in the negotiations about that. But Brooklyn needs to, that pick is not coming. They're not getting that pick. It's going to fall in the top 20. And now the parallels with the 96-97 Spurs are just going to be irresistible.
Yes.
It's perfect.
I said it before. There's a kid named Anthony Edwards who plays for Georgia. And I'm not saying, you know, if they end up getting a top three pick, who knows? But if you were to add him to a team like that and you get everybody back with Clay being healthy, with Steph being healthy, if D'Lo is still there, who knows what they try to do with the trade deadline. But they might be the favorite to win it next year, not just compete in the West. I mean, that's a hell of a team. Klay Thompson makes a difference with that team.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, they swept through the Western Conference last year after KD got hurt. They won the two games or a game and a half, I guess, against Houston, then swept Portland. And I've said this before, like, I think if Klay did not get hurt in game six, I kind of thought they were going to come back and win the finals against Toronto and win game seven in Toronto. Like they, Clay was having one of those games in game six before he got hurt. But like now I just have to. Joe Lacob, the owner of the Warriors.
You can't help yourself.
Tells Ramona Shelburne last night.
What is he doing?
Tanking is against every single thing I and we stand for, Lacob said. That's what it says. So I guess he's just hoping that none of us remember the 2011-12 season when they owed Utah a top seven protected pick and damn near rolled me out there for the last month of the season to ensure they lost enough games to keep that pick and then select Harrison Barnes. Like, I know it's not the same. That's a different kind of tanking. It's just as egregious. So all I'm saying is just say we don't want to tank. We're going to try to win games. Newsflash,
they don't even need to tank. They're just going to get ran off the court.
Yeah, this is organic tanking.
Yes, it's naturally going to occur. You're in the Western Conference. I mean, it's like even watching Phoenix play the other day. Like who would have thought Phoenix would have came out of nowhere? I know Minnesota lost, but Minnesota's playing pretty well. Like you have the bottom teams in the West that are just coming out of nowhere and just playing extremely well. Like there's nothing this young basketball team is going to be able to do. D'Lo is a good player. I think he got his money due to the market. I'm happy he got his money and for every player to get their money. But I also think, you know, now is time Draymond Green is going to have to score and that's not what he's known for.
All I'm saying is just say we're going to try to win. You know, we're a competitive, proud team. Don't pound your fist and be like, it's against what we stand for ethically and all of this when it's like, no, you did it. You already did it. You tried to lose games on purpose to keep a draft pick. It's not even that long ago. I know you did it. I remember you on the team. It happened. Like, don't get on the soapbox. That's all I'm saying.
It seems to really bother you.
I just don't like it. It was like when Tillman Fertitta said last year, like, it's the how dare you finger wagging when he was like, how dare anyone suggest I don't want to pay the luxury tax? Meanwhile, Daryl Morey is like trying to trade everyone to get out. Just be a little less lectury.
Tell the truth.
And grandstanding. Not even tell the truth. Just massage the truth a little more politely.
Yeah. Well, I think the truth is going to speak for itself. It's really, regardless of whatever Joe Lacob says, it's going to be a painful year for the Warriors. But look, if somebody were to tell you, hey, the next 6 out of 7 years of your life is going to be a fantastic life. Fantastic. And you're like, you know what? If I have to go through one down year in order to have 6 out of 7 years that are fantastic, or even maybe more years on the back end, maybe I take that deal. I take that deal, hands down. They're going to be fine. It's going to be 1 year where they're going to struggle. I think next year they will be back on their way to contend.
I agree. And you, the West, I mean, you can pick any of these teams you want to talk about. I mean, think the West is, so Phoenix was an obvious team. If you put the 7 or 8 worst teams in the NBA this year projected, Phoenix was the obvious one that they're going to be more competitive than people expect. I didn't expect this. They're top 10 in both offense and defense after, you know, 5 games.
With no DeAndre Ayton.
With no Ayton. That's better than I expected. Minnesota is obviously better than I expected. You go down the line, the Pelicans, who were expected to contend for a playoff spot, are 0-4. The Kings, who were expected to contend for a playoff spot, are 0-5 with a point differential. Are you ready? Minus 17 per game. Something's rotten in Sacramento, and I don't know what it is. I have to spend part of today figuring out what's wrong in the fabric of that team. Memphis ain't an easy out.
No.
How about Ja Morant? I'm all
rookie
in.
Rookie of the year now? Rookie of the year now? Are you ready to say that?
This is a really good draft class. Barrett's good.
Yep.
DeAndre
Hunter's good.
The Atlanta guys are solid and big. I mean, Zion is obviously going to be good. You know, we can go down the line. I mean, there's a lot of, like, Hachimura's good.
Yep.
PJ Washington is playing well for Charlotte. The guards, Culver and Garland are so far, but this is a fun rookie class. Pick another disappointing team.
I guess another team, and it's hard because you lose Zion and everything changes, but Brandon Ingram's having a fantastic year so far, but I guess Zach, I expected a lot more out of Drew Holiday.
Well, he's missed the last couple of games. I'm giving them a pass.
I know.
Because they've had 3 key players hurt the last couple of games.
But still, like, I don't know. I picked them to finish 8th in the West and get that last playoff spot originally.
I forgot that they were your 8th seed pick.
That was my 8th seed pick. I mean, now, obviously, the Mavs are going to be in that conversation. A lot of other teams are going to be in that conversation.
I had the Mavs, And they're better than I thought they would be.
They're a lot better.
They look really solid. Right now, the surprise playoff teams are Phoenix and Minnesota. So, Minnesota. Let's talk about the
fight. But it's early.
Let's talk about the fight. Let's talk about the fight.
Okay.
Forget Minnesota. We'll talk about the quality of the Timberwolves. Is the fight, as a former player, is the fight and the subsequent Instagram trash talk, which is a, that's a sentence now, Instagram trash, that's a thing. Is that funny, good for the league, embarrassing, bad for the league? Where do you fall on this?
I think, you know, 5 years ago, I would have said that's embarrassing for the league. I don't condone any of the language that was used. It's locker room talk, okay?
It's a good air quote. You just made
air quotes.
That's a
good
air
quote.
Very
just
solid
left it
air
at
quote.
That.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like we want players to be who they are. And I will say this. I've known Kat since he was 15 years old. I watched him. Went to the same high school. We played at St. Joseph's High School, same high school I went to. And Kat has always tried to hold himself in a very first-class like manner. Like he tries to present that. So I feel like for Kat to respond back to the way Joel Embiid did and for that to happen, I'd like that for Kat. I want to see Kat play more pissed off all the time. I want to see him get angry and try to rip people apart. That's I feel like that was the missing key to him overall.
It's funny you say that because I was reading some of the coverage. Michael Lee in The Athletic had a really good story about the aftermath of the fight today. And I think it was Jeff Teague said something like, he was polite about it. He said, I'm not saying Kat wouldn't have responded that way last year, but maybe he wouldn't have or something like that. And
He would have walked away. And the same way, I feel like he reverted back a little bit, Zach, when the press conference came. He's like, yeah, I'm competitive. Like, that's who I known Karl-Anthony Towns to be. Like, he could tell he was pissed off, but he was still saying the right thing. And I like him showing a flair. Like, I feel like that's the one thing that was missing from his game. And it was missing ultimately, I think, from the DNA of Minnesota. Like, just waiting for somebody to be pissed off. Like, that's what we wait for with Andrew Wiggins. Like, oh, okay, like, you want to be a top 100 guy? Like, prove everybody wrong. Dominate people. And I like that. I think that's a good start for them.
It's funny because, like, fighting is dumb. Yeah. Right? Fighting, grown men throwing punches at each other invariably looks stupid. Hockey fighting has always bothered me. Like, why is this just allowed? This is just part of the sport.
When you grew up playing sports, did you ever get in a fight?
Once.
I got in a lot of fights.
Sports are violent.
Like, people trying to take my ball, arguing on calls. Like, a lot of fist fights have broken out.
Okay, but you're a kid, is what I'm saying.
It happened in the league, too.
Okay.
I mean, it's just... But like, I feel like it's a different day and age where we don't see people react that way anymore because you have all these different outlets. And I feel like it's a part of the game in the '90s that it used to intimidate. It was psychological warfare. I'm not condoning it once again.
No, it's funny. I have the same kind of ambivalence because what I was saying is like when hockey fights happen and it's just an accepted part of the game, I'm like, well, this is dumb. And then like when people get hurt, it's not funny. And I realize the Kermit Washington Rudy Tomjanovich thing is like a once in a lifetime sort of occurrence, but like, when people get hurt, it's not funny. You know what I mean? Like the Bobby Portis, Nikola Mirotic thing, that wasn't funny.
No.
That screwed up the Bulls and it screwed up Mirotic's career. And it's like, it's fun to joke about that stuff, but it's not funny. And the Instagram stuff is because I'm just too old for it. I think that's funny.
It's a 2019
The language aside, I think it's funny. And I will say this, no matter how ambivalent I am, the next time they play, I want to be at the game.
Yes, I am watching. Locked in. And this is who Joel Embiid is. I mean, Joel Embiid had Kat with the little chicken wing. But as much as I like it for Minnesota, I also think, like, this is who Philly needs to be, Zach, all the time. Like, they need to take a little bit out of the equation of what the Bad Boys had with Detroit because they're going to win a lot of games ugly. Like, their offense sometimes is not pretty. But you have to do things like that in the defensive end, and you have to set the tone. And it's... You know, how do you get into people's minds, the opposing team's best player, in order to get an advantage?
I picked Philly to win the East.
Same here.
Their defense has been ridiculous.
Yes.
They're number two in the league behind Utah, who sneakily, really weird but good start for the Jazz. Weird in that their offense hasn't been as good as people thought. They're not taking a lot of threes, which is strange for them. But this is coming off 3 or 4 years in a row where they get off to terrible starts and have to dig out of the hole after 40 games, and they're 4-1. They have number one seed potential now.
I agree.
Having gotten off to a good start finally.
I'm glad Mike Conley started making shots last night.
Yeah, people panic about these early season things. I always remind people, the Sixers in the first year of the process started 3-0 And the Monday after they were 3-0, the internet was all these think pieces about how are they 3-0? What are they doing? Is it working? Is the process not going to happen? And I'm like, no, actually they stink. Turns out they stink. And it was just, it was a funny little thing. But so what have you thought of Philly so far? Cause I just, I want to watch every Sixers game. I'm so fascinated by them.
I love watching them play. I tell you, a kid who I watch play at Washington who I love when he's on the court, Matisse Thybulle. Your mouth dropped. I was waiting for you to say something.
He's in my column tomorrow. That dude, I'm having trouble putting it into words. He does stuff on defense that there are five guys in the entire NBA who can do that. And maybe like three wings. He's the best wing defender rookie.
I think I've ever
maybe
seen.
Maybe since Kawhi, and I'm not sure Kawhi was this good when he walked in the league.
Kawhi was a great wing. I don't think Kawhi was as active as Matisse is.
Dude, he had a play against Atlanta that I'm putting in my column tomorrow. Where in transition, Kevin Huerter caught the ball on the right wing. Did you see this
play?
Yes,
I did.
Thybulle flew by him. And Huerter, you could tell Huerter's like, oh, he flew by me. I'm going to rise up for three. Pivot,
recovered.
Spin, contest. I think he got a fingertip on it. And I wish I could see Kevin Huerter's face as he's putting that jump shot up. Because he must be thinking like, oh, what the hell? Where did this dude come from?
I just think that they are built for playoff basketball. Half court. Now, granted, they haven't shot the ball well, and that's always going to be something that's going to follow this team. I don't know what they're shooting. I think it's like 30% from the 3-point line or something.
And their offense is 22nd in the league through four games. And you can see them, I mean, as much as you want to say, oh, we're going to space Simmons to the corner more this year, and, you know, we're going to figure out crunch time. You can see them working out the kinks. Like, certain guys, all of a sudden, Simmons and Embiid try to post up at the same time.
Yeah.
Simmons is still in the dunker spot a lot. Horford is trying to figure out where he needs to be. And then crunch time against Atlanta the other night, the last game I watched them, it was a lot of Tobias Harris trying to create his own shot. And he made a couple tough buckets, and it's like, you're going to have to rely on that sometimes.
Yeah, he's going to have to be your closer.
That scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that this summer, after watching Ben play and shoot and work out and talking to his trainer, I thought he was going to take that next step. And look, there's still a lot of the season left, but like, Ben needs to let go a little bit. And I know people wonder about his shooting, and he wonders about his shooting, but it's the missing link. It's the missing link to this team.
Well, that link is going to be, it's going to be missing for a while.
I hear you.
Cause it's not happening. Other disappointing teams. Let's talk, since we're talking top of the East. Very weird start for the Milwaukee Bucks. Two and two.
Blew two 19-point leads.
Blew two big leads.
One game they lost because he fouled out. Giannis fouled out. Well, the other game they won when he fouled out.
And Bud prides himself. The very first thing he did when he got that job is, we're going from last to first in foul rate. Mm-hmm. Like, most fouls to least fouls. And he did it. And now they're in the middle of the pack. Another thing that I checked this morning, they went from first to last in percentage of shots at the rim. They were first last year and they're last so far this year. And that, when I saw that set, I said, that makes sense to me, because when I've watched them this year, I haven't been able to put my finger on it, kind of like with the Nets, but it's not as easy this year. Something's not as easy. It's not flowing the same way.
Is Chris Middleton the second best option? Is he like a number two that can get you there? It's a question I ask myself all the time. I'm happy he got paid his money. He deserves it. But that's a legitimate question, Zach. After you have Giannis, you have Chris Middleton, then what?
Well,
Eric Bledsoe?
You're counting on Giannis plus systemic genius and the way that you play and the style of play. And yeah, Chris Middleton in the playoffs has had some moments. So now you're counting on that too. And I don't think it's wrong of them to say, hey, Chris Middleton has stepped up in a lot of playoff series for us, particularly against Boston. But it just hasn't, it's four games.
So it's still early.
But
it's apparent.
The rim shots are interesting, because you know who's really good at getting into the rim? Like, last year he was almost in the 100th percentile for guards at getting to the rim. Malcolm Brogdon.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, he looked really good last night.
He looked great last night.
He's just a really good player.
His basketball IQ is off the charts, and he's always at the right place at the right time. And I'll tell you, even watching the game last night, there's so many times defensively, Zach, you see guys stand up, take possessions off. My man's always down in the stance. Like, he's constantly communicating to everybody. That was a massive loss for them.
56% of Brogdon shots were at the rim last year. That's ridiculous for a guard. 56% of his shot attempts came at the rim.
No, it's vice versa. I think it's hard for him. I don't think he's a lead player on a team. I think he's a great complementary player, which is why, you know, you saw them struggle a little bit without having Victor Oladipo, but damn, he's so good as being part of like a very high-end supportive cast.
He's doing better than I thought than he would without Oladipo, frankly. Like Brogdon has not been the problem in Indiana's 1-3 start, which I think, you know, I picked Indiana to miss the playoffs. I didn't really feel super confident in that prediction. Watching them last night, I think their toughness, I think they're going to figure things, some stuff out. That was a tough, gritty performance last night. Now, who knows when Oladipo is coming back and what condition he will be in when he comes back. But I actually came away from that game thinking, yeah, Indiana might be, despite being 1-3, they have found
TJ Warren, Jeremy Lamb played well last night.
They got a little gusto in them. That's, you know, starting 0-3 did not knock them off the rails. It didn't seem like to me.
If their wings can play well, I like that second unit. I think that second unit can get an advantage between Lamb and between Warren the way they play.
Can I nominate my most disappointing team in the league so far?
Of course.
And then we can talk
about
it.
Is it not
them.
The Warriors?
Yeah.
Is that by default? Like use them?
I thought the Warriors would struggle. Now, I did not think it would look that bad. And now it's just that Steph's hurt. It's unfair now. Let's not pile on them. Other than the Kings, who I'm not quite ready to talk about yet. Boy, the Bulls stink.
Stink. Okay. So Fan Hat, right? Like the team I play for.
Yeah.
Love watching this team. It's stuff we talk about all the time. I think offense, they rank, as far as pace, they're like 22, 23, somewhere around there.
I'll tell you right now.
In the league. But if you're going to have a slower pace,
20th now, after 20th, last okay. night.
But if you're going to have a slower pace or a marginal pace, you have to be good defensively. And I think there's like right there defensively, they're like 21.
They are 23rd in both offense and defense. So that means that translates to you're bad at everything.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like Zach needs help in the backcourt. He needs somebody to create. I love watching Zach LaVine play.
But do you?
I do. You don't.
I like watching Zach LaVine dunk.
Huh.
I'm not convinced, and we talked a little bit about this. I mean, he came on my podcast this week. We talked a little bit about his defense and his struggles defensively. Like, I think he still needs to prove he can be a winning player in the NBA, and this has not been an
Isn't that situational?
Sure, it's partly situational. He was on a young rebuilding team in Minnesota and immediately was thrust into being a point guard because Rubio was hurt and he mm-hmm. wasn't ready for that. And now he's on a young rebuilding team in Chicago. But like, and they're still, as high as expectations were for them relative to the past couple seasons, they're still really young. Carter and Markkanen are really young. LaVine's still young. Their point guard situation behind Satoransky just never plays enough. Every team that has him doesn't play him enough. The other guys are young. I don't know why Coby White is allowed to shoot 20 times in 5 minutes. I don't know why they permit him to do that. They're playing three point guards together off the bench because their wings are so bad behind Otto Porter, who has also been bad.
That's the problem.
But I think LaVine, it's time. It's time. He's not a kid anymore. It's time to prove that you're a winning player. And part of that is I think you can't just be making mistakes on defense all the time, and he still is.
Well, I got a chance to watch the game against the Knicks when the Knicks got their first win at MSG. Which was a tough game to watch because just defensively it was bad on both ends. I can't tell you how many times Bulls players are just out of position. Just it kind of seemed like they were just
well because I don't know. They're playing a very aggressive pick and roll defense. They want Carter, who's really good, and Markkanen, and trapping aggressively in the pick and roll. And you know Thaddeus Young can do that. He's done that a lot in his career. But to play that way, you need the guys behind the ball to make the correct rotations, and like the Bulls cannot do that. Like the Zach LaVine is not going to be like, okay, I X out over here. Well, no, wait, I got to go to the corner. This is the corner shooter is really good. The wing shooter is not so good. Let me, you know, rotate correctly based on it. Like they can't do that.
There just seems like there's no leader on that team. Like that's what I was saying. Like I feel like Zach needs a lead guard, somebody that can help them and like just really kind of communicate to everybody what they need to do, when they need to do it. There's nobody doing that for that squad right now other than Jim Boylan trying to do that from the sideline.
They're allowing a ton of shots at the rim, 29th in the league in shots allowed at the rim.
Just bad basketball. It's tough to watch.
New Orleans is the way. Yeah, they're just, it's just, and part of it is they haven't made shots. Let me bring up their shooting numbers because it's bad. They are shooting 28% from three, which is 29th. They are shooting 38% from the mid-range, which is 16th, and they're shooting 58% at the rim, which is 24th. So they just can't make a shot from anywhere. And they are also, and by the way, Markkanen's too young to, like, I still have hope for him. Bulls fans are starting to go the other way on him. I still think he's going to be a good NBA player.
Just need him to be more aggressive.
And sometimes, but sometimes he really, he's rebounding the hell out of the ball. He's the only player on that team who's rebounding. Him and Carter. The other guys are not rebounding at all. They're like the worst rebounding team in the league by a mile. But I'm now in year three. I'm starting to worry just a little bit. Not a lot. I still think he's gonna be
really
good. I'm starting to worry.
Year
that
three?
Is Markkanen gonna be, year three for Markkanen.
Yeah.
Is he gonna be one of these shooters who doesn't make as many shots as like it looks like he should make? Is he going to be one? I hate to bring up an old bull, but is he going to be like Mirotić, where it's like he looks like a really good shooter, great stroke, he's 7 feet tall, he has games when it's like, what are you even going to do against him? And then you look at the numbers, like, oh, he shot 34% from three this year. Is he going to be one of those guys?
I like Lauri Markkanen.
I do too.
I like him a lot, and I think sometimes because certain players get it right away, there's this tendency just to rush into this assessment, like, you know, are they going to get it? Like, everybody, look, when my first year in the league, I only played 1 year in the league, but by the time I realized all the sets, by the time I realized all the different defensive schemes that we're in each and every night, like, there's a lot to download with that. And that's just you focusing on the schemes. It's not even you focusing on the dynamic of your team with a lot of young players and everybody's fighting for playing time with no leadership in conjunction with that. That's the problem.
Their schedule has been angel food cake easy. Cavs twice, Knicks, Charlotte, and a team I'm Memphis.
Memphis.
And they're 1-4.
Yeah.
And it's now the saving grace for every Eastern Conference team is that the East is so bad that you can be 1-8. If you're 1-8 in the West, it's over. Pack it in, you're done.
You have no chance.
If you're 1-8 in the East, we can get the sixth seed. But for them to be 1-4 against that schedule is hugely disappointing, and they've just been bad at everything. And I don't know really what the solution is, because it's not like they have some magic pill personnel wise that they can, you know, throw into the lineup and that's going to change everything, or some rotation adjustment. I mean, they can make some little ones, but there's nothing glaring, I don't think.
Zach, can I tell you, every night I watch basketball on NBA League Pass, and the 7 o'clock games, if there aren't West Coast teams playing, there are only teams on the East Coast, Eastern Conference, it's hard for me to get pumped up to watch games. Like, I really watch all the games. Like, go back, watch them first thing in the morning too. West Coast games, I just get pumped up for. You know it's going to be battles. Speaking of a battle, Houston really needs 159 points to beat the Wizards.
I did not see that game.
Oh, I watched it. And everybody this morning, oh, James Harden had 59 points, and he was incredible. And, you know, I think Russ had a triple double. And I'm like, no, that's not the takeaway from the game. The takeaway from the game is that Houston allowed this team to score 158 points. They are the number one offensive rated team, and they're the second worst defensive team.
That's correct.
Like, it's a running gun style. Like, you need 159 points to beat the Wizards. No, I know we talked about obviously re-signing Bradley Beal. That's great. But the Wizards, 159 points?
They needed every
single one of them.
Every one of those points.
Is that not a concern for
First
you?
First of all, I want to give props to the Wizards.
Okay.
Because they were dead last in my league pass rankings this year, which means they were deemed by an algorithm that I created with Bill Simmons. Algorithm is generous. It's just a very simplistic
scale.
Very
impressive. You can't say algorithm and then say simplistic scale.
No, I just like to say algorithm because I just like to pretend that we created something sophisticated where all we did was rank teams 1 to 10 in a bunch of categories. They were last. They've been fun to watch.
They have been fun to watch. Yeah.
They're frisky.
I'm with you.
Mo Wagner is launching threes. Davis Bertans can't miss. I like Hachimura. He's a little chaotic, but then looks very comfortable.
You project him to make the playoffs in the East?
No.
Okay.
No, I project him to be really bad. I'm just saying They're fun to watch. I didn't think they'd be fun to watch, and they are. And they just got Troy Brown back last night.
Yep.
The Rockets, I'm going to give time because they're just such a weird team. They're very shallow in terms of their depth. And the Russ James thing, I think, has actually worked quite well on offense so far. They've banked three wins already. Defensively, they have a lot to figure out, and I think that was the underrated worry about them after they got Russ. I'm going to give it a little time. You're worried already about their defense.
Yeah, it's because I – look, I think the numbers they're going to put up are going to be ridiculous. And I know we still have a lot of basketball left. Still a lot of moves that teams can make. I just – their ability in a half-court scenario, like that's going to – that's going to concern me a little bit when you're not going to be able to increase the pace of a game.
They're giving up a ton of threes. That is a little bit concerning, but they're not giving up any shots at the rim.
I've seen so many times. There are times they didn't even contest shots. Like, they're not even contesting shots. Now, I think they're one of the best teams to watch play, one of the most exciting teams to watch play. I don't know if that translates into a championship.
I don't think it – I mean, I didn't think they were going to be a finalist or a champion this year, which – it's boring to say. I think Russ changes them stylistically in ways that are healthy for them and much more fun to watch. I don't think it really changes the quality of their team either way, Russ versus CP, except that Russ is more likely to be healthy, I think, in May and June.
Who would James Harden need to be with in order for you to consider them a championship contender? It wouldn't be in the style of basketball.
Someone like Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, I think. Like a wing who could... who defends his ass off and can take a lot of the offensive load, share the offensive load at a high level and shoot threes. I think it would need to be somebody like that.
It's kind of similar a little bit. I mean, I know they.
But that's not a knock on James.
It's hard to win a knock on James. Yeah, I agree. That's what I was just asking you. I think
Kevin Durant, ironically.
Huh. Just bring back the whole OKC team.
Just keep alternating combinations of two of them until you find the right one. I don't necessarily believe in Houston as a title contender, but I mean, if you look at the West, the Lakers have looked good. Defensively, they've been really good.
I agree. I like them better when, I mean, closing games, they'll have AD at the five. He's going to have to do that.
I'm actually surprised how little they have played them there. I mean, for entire games to go by and him not to play any minutes at the five, which has happened at least once or twice, is a little surprising to me. And the fit of him, LeBron, and a traditional five, you can tell they're trying to figure out. There's no clean way to use AD in those situations. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's going to space. Sometimes he's going to post. Sometimes he's going to pick and pop, but he's not a
great shooter.
Sometimes he pops to three-point range and then dribbles into two-point range and misses, and you're like, that's not that sexy. But then you have nights where it's like, doesn't even matter who else is on the court. He gets to the line 25 times.
Yeah. Like the other night, 40, 20, and 25 free throws, right?
And there was just nothing they could do with him. There's absolutely nothing.
Shout out to Dwight Howard, actually. Yeah. Whoa. Okay, Dwight. Getting to the gym early. Like everything I hear about him right now has been positive, which is not always the case with Dwight.
It has not always been the case.
No, it's not.
But I haven't seen every second of Lakers basketball this year, but I've seen a lot of it, and I think I've seen one or two Dwight Howard post-ups, which, you know, that used to be a four-minute stretch. You would see one or two Dwight Howard post-ups, and they would be travels and jump hooks that hit the backboard. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally one time he would overpower someone and dunk.
The fact that you're saying all that with a straight face is pretty impressive.
But it just wasn't very pretty. And the worry was always like, no matter what he says, because this is the 17th consecutive summer where he's given big exclusive interviews about how this is the year I'm going to change. And I get it. Mm. He throw me the ball. I'm in the post. I'm trying to be Hakeem Olajuwon and here, get me the ball. Oh, I traveled again. But he has not done that, to his credit. Do you believe in the Wolves?
To make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Not in the West. I think, obviously, look, Cats had an incredible start to the year. Wiggins is okay. I don't know if Wiggins is going to blossom into that player that everybody's hoped he could be. And I think the window is over for me. I know it feels like it's over for me.
For Wiggins?
Is the window still open for you? For him? Because I don't sometimes think you can change the aggressiveness of somebody.
He's had some crunch time moments this year.
I understand.
And he has these plays where, now, people are going to remember the crunch time threes he hit the other night against Miami. He's shooting 22% from three, so let's dial that back. The plays that are more exciting to me are the pick and rolls where the big man drops back, and he just goes at him. And it doesn't look pretty, like it's all elbows and it's herky-jerky, but he just, like, the guy keeps backpedaling because this explosive 6'6 wing with elbows pointed out is coming at me, and then he just kind of lays a little floater in. He's done that a few times. The book on him being a star is closed.
Yes, that's what I meant by window.
The book on him being a helpful, complimentary player, I still don't think is closed. Now, it's going to take some major adjustments to his game, but I'm not going to totally close the book on that.
I wanted to clarify that. I meant the window has closed for me as it related to him being like a superstar.
That window got closed and then someone threw a baseball through it and it's like it got smashed. Like that window is gone.
So, I mean, essentially, I just don't know if they have enough. I mean, and Cat has to play at such a high level every single night, which he's, I mean, with the exception of him fouling out of that game, he's done. But for him to be able to sustain that with that roster, it's going to be interesting.
Towns has been insane. Insane. I mean, the stuff he's doing is like these step back threes and it's effortless. It's effortless. His 3-point stroke is effortless. But I'm with you. I didn't buy them as a playoff team. I still don't buy them as a playoff team. I think the drop off from Towns to everybody else is so big. Now they're getting good minutes from Okogie and Lehman and these kind of guys.
I like Josh Okogie and I like Jake Lehman.
Yeah, those guys are good players, but, and the bellwether for them is they're just going to need a Teague or a Wiggins or one of those guys to have an out of character game every night to win. Even with Towns putting in 35 on efficient shooting and all this.
That's why I said I kind of feel like I'm over the Andrew Wiggins thing. I think he's, you know, you put Andrew Wiggins on the Lakers, you're like, wow, okay, great wing piece. But I think him on Minnesota, where you need him to be spectacular every night, I don't think he has that in him every single night.
No, he doesn't. But you know, look, credit to them. They've started off really well. Phoenix has started off really well. I don't really buy them as playoff teams. But the West it's like Denver hasn't lit the world on fire so far. It hasn't looked as smooth for them. Like they're kind of like Milwaukee. It hasn't looked as smooth for them. Jokic looks not in peak condition.
Yes.
I'll say.
What's been peak condition for him? Conditioning or?
Not in peak Jokic condition.
Okay, Jokic
not
condition.
Even by
okay,
Jokic
all
right. Standards.
Good clarification.
And nobody loves Nikola more than
me. I love him. I love his game. Also very concerned, like struggling with it. Is it just Michael Porter Jr. just can't find minutes?
It is interesting that after Beasley, all of the stuff you heard in camp, coming out of that camp, he's the best player on the floor.
DMPs, Zach. DMPs.
It is interesting. Based on what they were saying in camp, I thought he's going to be in the rotation. He has to be in the rotation. And, you know.
And I understand they're deep at that position between Beasley and Barton and Harris and all these guys.
Wancho's not playing either. Like, they got a lot of good players, but their bench has been unsteady.
Their bench was horrible the other night.
Against Dallas. Yeah, their bench has been, is going to be, when you put five bench players, almost any team, when you put five bench guys on the floor, it's going to be feast or famine. You just don't know what you're going to get. That's the nature of, like, that's why teams will usually have one of their starters on the floor, or smart teams will have one starter on the floor.
I think I'm right. I think the other night when they lost, I think their bench combined for like less than 10 points.
It was bad.
It was really bad.
I don't remember exactly what the box score said, but it was bad. So it's interesting. You know,
Dallas?
I love Dallas. I love is strong. I thought they were going to be the seventh or eighth seed. Didn't have a high level of confidence in that, but I just like their roster. They look better than I thought they would look already.
Paul Pierce, we were in a countdown the other night. Paul Pierce said that they are a top five duo in the league. And he said that Luka Doncic is top five, one of the most exciting players in the league now. Now, look, obviously that started a lot of controversy, right? Because you start going through the duos. I mean, you think about AD, LeBron. You think about Kawhi, PG. You think about Russ, James.
D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Poole.
It's
Terry Rozier.
Terry Rozier, PJ Washington.
Some good ones.
But I will tell you, on the top five most exciting players to watch in the league, I mean, this is all subjective. But damn, every time I sit down and I watch a Dallas game, I'm buckled in.
What I liked about their roster is those two guys complement each other.
Yes.
They can run a two-man game together. They can both hurt you on switches, although that's one thing Porzingis still needs to get better at. When he gets a little guy on him, it's got to be better than a turnaround 18-footer. And the other guys on the roster complement them. The rest of the roster is good shooters, like DeLon Wright, who's a point guard who can spot up and defend, Finney Smith and Justin Jackson, who can guard fours, and you hope make enough spot-up threes. Just enough to, you can, and Finney Smith looks, the numbers, his shooting hasn't improved, but he looks very aggressive this year. He's attacking closeouts confidently. I've liked what I've seen out of him.
Shout out to my boy Seth Greenberg, who coached him at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, there you go. Seth Curry, who can shoot lights out.
Jalen Brunson, who's just tough
as
tough ass kid.
make smart plays. Rim runners like Powell and Kleba has been really good. They just, all the pieces fit really well around the two. Now, they don't have the classic, you know, none of those guys are just named. You would be like, well, he's the third best player on a championship team. That's fine. You can figure that part out later. But I think even Hardaway's been giving them, you know, the shooting was very streaky, was very bad until the Denver game. But like, they just make sense. It makes sense.
I got a chance to spend time with Tim Hardaway this summer over at Chris Brickley's gym in New York. And I was like, you know, what's your approach in playing? He's like, hey, man, like I've got a chance to work out with Luka. Like my hands just always have to be ready. It's always have to be ready because I never know when the ball's coming. He's like, I can't say that for other people I play with. Like usually, you know, ball gets rotated. You understand, all right, ball's about to hit me in the pocket. With Luka, I just feel like I always have to be extra aware. And his ability to deliver the ball at the optimal position of me just raising and shooting is different than other players I play with. I found that to be fascinating.
Interesting.
I think sometimes, especially as a point guard, I would hit people when they're open. My passes weren't always like lock and step with right in the stomach. Like, and sometimes for shooters, if you hit them properly, it's part of their mechanics. It morphs into it. And that's what Luka does. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. People see the dynamic passes or the assists, but it's where the passes go. It's like the efficiency in which the passes go. It makes him so unique.
Well, and he has, like LeBron, he's big. Yes. And so he can see over defenses. And like LeBron, he is a fantastic long distance passer. His lasers to the corner on the pick and roll are accurate and fast and often come when like the defense is still rotating into the paint. So he gets them, he gets their footing going the wrong way. He wrong foots them in a tennis term. And what I like about him? He's really good in like kind of the in-between moments. Like it's very easy to see pick and roll and he throws a pass and like that's normal stuff. But like when that gets gummed up, he's really good at improvising. Like he has, he's a good give and go player. He'll just manufacture, like he'll hit, oh, I got to hit KP and then I'll take a handoff. I'll go the other way. And he has an incredible up and under. He is roasting dudes with up and under pivot moves, like embarrassing
them. People. Like in the skill set itself, I was with Bill Duffy watching the Knicks game and Bill was saying, you know, how skilled he is. And this is something I agree with Bill on a lot. I don't care what anybody says. I hear guys talk about European players all the time. And I think sometimes people on the outside think that a little bit of the dynamic has changed. But I still think for kids who came up in America, they still look at some Europeans as if they're a little bit soft here and there. And Luka has that to him. Like watching that thing with him and Bradley Beal, like I like seeing Luka like that because he has that edge. And just being a pro for a longer time than other people, there's something different about him.
I think they're a playoff team. I'm very confident in that.
Who do you have in the playoffs from the West?
I'm confident in my top eight. I think I'm going to go.
Who are your top eight? Talk me through it.
Well, I'll just go by standings right now. San Antonio. Here's who I had. San Antonio, okay. Utah, Lakers, Clippers, Mavericks. That's five. Rockets, Nuggets, Blazers. Those are my eight. You had New Orleans. Backtrack.
No, I had New Orleans when before Zion got hurt.
I'm talking about preseason. Who did you pick preseason?
I had those same team. I didn't have the Dallas Mavericks. I did have the Mavericks.
I'm going 8-8. I think Minnesota and Phoenix are going to fall out. Sacramento and New Orleans are already far behind. Not far behind, but like they're worrisome. I'm going to go 8-8. In the East.
Oh, you're really patting yourself on the back right now.
Let me go back. In the East, I don't think I'm going to go 8-8 because I had Chicago.
Okay.
Which I don't feel good about.
Yeah.
And I had Brooklyn, which I still feel pretty good about. And as I said, I didn't have Indiana and I didn't feel great about that, but two teams we got to shout out in the East before they drag it to first take.
Talk to
the
me.
Defending champion Toronto Raptors.
Oh my goodness. Woo! I'm sitting there at the beginning of the season like, guys, I don't know about this Toronto team. Like Mark Serge, they're older, guys on the wrong side of 30s. Kyle just signed that 1 year extension, $31 million. Great that he got his money, but how much is left in the tank there? And then so you start watching games, I'm like, man, Pascal Siakam, okay. Like stepping up a level of your game. Fred VanVleet, okay. Like I think guys are just owning it. They have that security and that understanding of who they are.
The biggest development for them early season to me individually has been that Anunoby looks really OG. Good. Yeah. He looks like a really good supporting player. And like take all the old guys out in a year, right? Kyle, Mark, Serge, pretend they're all gone. If I'm a star and I see Pascal, VanVleet, assuming they bring him back, and Anunoby, and I'm like, That's a nice supporting cast I can walk into.
Can you imagine if he gave you backup minutes last year if he wasn't out during the playoffs?
Yeah. Oof. That's like a plug and play supporting cast for name a superstar free agent or don't name. It's any of them. It's like a plug and play. If anyone wants to go to Canada, Toronto's a great city. The other team we got to shout out, Miami.
Okay. I mean, I love Tyler Hero.
Dude, that guy is so good.
I said it. We were talking to one of my producers. And we were laughing last year. I was like, you know what, man? I may give the comparison, and I'm not saying he's going to be offensively like him, but he reminds me of the same kind of – he got overlooked the way we overlooked Devin Booker a little bit when he played at Kentucky because of the system and the pieces. And but, like, that kid is just different overall. Like, he just wants to rip your heart out, and he doesn't care. Like, it's a – and the fact that he works out with Jimmy Butler every morning at 4 a.m., like, he's really came underneath that culture. He gets it.
He's big. He's releases really fast. He doesn't need a lot of time or space. And he gets in the mix for rebounds. Like, he's tough. Mm-hmm. I like him.
And Kendrick Nunn.
I'm glad you bring him up. I saw a tweet from someone yesterday who said, man, Spo doesn't get enough credit for squeezing wins out of a team of overpaid role players. And I agree, Spo's a great coach. But that's not how they're winning. The overplayed role players are not why they're winning. In fact, two of them have been banished. Waiters Island is underwater. It's over for Waiters Island. Everything's boarded up. They're winning because they found Josh Richardson in the second round to turn him into Jimmy Butler. They found Kendrick Nunn off the G League scrap heap. He's averaging 21 points a game. They got Adebayo at 13, Hero at 14, back of the lottery picks, which are coin flips. They got an above average starting center already in Bam, and a dude who looks like a monster coming off the bench in Tyler Hero, who's going to start for them, you know, at some point. I don't know when, but he's coming off the bench now that Butler's back. That's why they're winning, because their front office worked the margins like almost perfectly. It's remarkable.
Legitimate question for you. And, like, obviously the East is weak. It's down. So I don't think Miami's going to have a problem. But, like, can you sustain that level of play? Every time I watch a Miami game, I feel like I'm tired watching those guys play. They're locking up. They're trying to lock up every possession.
I think they can because they're pretty deep, even with those two guys not contributing anything, Waiters and James Johnson. They're not even playing Derek Jones Jr., who gave them good minutes last year. Dragic has embraced the bench role. And when you can bring
second
Dragic
unit,
and Hero off the bench, that's really helpful. And Butler just got back. Like, I think they're a legitimately pretty good team.
I think they finished top four in the East.
I had them finishing third. That was one of my crazy predictions for the season. I didn't think they'd start like a house of fire like this. So.
You and all your predictions. I mean, you're pretty on point.
No, I'm going to be totally wrong about the Bulls. I predicted Steph would win the scoring title.
Really?
That didn't work out for me.
Yeah. James won the scoring title.
Well, when he had 59. No, I had a bunch. I'm going to have a bunch of wrong ones. Like, I predicted a lot of trades that won't happen for sure. But I feel good about Dallas, and I feel good about Miami. And Boston looked very good last night. Boston looked better than I thought they would. All right, you got to go do First Take. What a night in the NBA. We were going to do this podcast yesterday.
Yesterday, thank God we waited.
I looked at the Wednesday schedule, and I was like, you know what? Towns, Embiid. I did not think a Hell in a Cell match was going to break out at courtside, and Ben Simmons was going to choke a dude. But,
Well, they deemed it as he was a peacemaker choker.
The NBA, according to Woj, has deemed that wrong. The NBA, Kiki Vandeweghe said he was not a peacemaker.
No.
He was going for the rear naked choke.
Yeah. The rear naked choke. Yeah. I never heard it expressed that way before. He was trying to tap out.
I don't think Kat was trying to tap out. But no. I think Kat was like, what's going on? Why is this dude on top of me? Where's Embiid? That was fun. I'm erring on the side of it's fun.
When do they play again?
Tomorrow.
I look forward to that date.
I think it's in March or something.
And I like it that it's like two traditional bigs in a game of all wings and pace and space. I love that.
Physical.
Yes.
I just like the league needs Joel Embiid. Agreed. The league needs a guy who's going to be like, I want to own everybody. I want to hurt their feelings. I want them to feel bad about themselves.
What was the quick punching thing he did as he was going to the locker room? It was like, was it because Towns and those guys like went up like the Rocky Balboa stairs and they took a picture?
That's why.
Maybe it was like that whole thing. Like, I don't know, but Embiid's the most entertaining personality in the game right now.
I agree. And the Sixers are 4-0. We'll see how their offense goes. All right, Jay, you got to go do First Take with KD. The KD media tour continues. Always great to talk ball to you. When are you back on Countdown? What day is it?
Tomorrow night.
Today's Thursday. That's right. Yeah, tomorrow night. Who do we have tomorrow?
I don't know. I'm just focused on tonight.
Get
through tonight.
Jay Williams, you can see you across ESPN program. You're doing great work. Thanks for the time. Go do some more TV.
Thanks for having me, Gio.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.